Hello and welcome to Yesterday's Indianapolis, a podcast about the over 200-year history of the Circle City. My name is Ed Fujawa. I'm a local historian and attorney, and have a kind of a special treat for everyone today. Instead of just me talking to you about some aspect of Indianapolis history, I have a guest, and today's guest is Dee Dee Davis. Welcome, Dee Dee.
How you doing?
So, Dee Dee, before we dive into what our topic for the day, can you kind of talk about what's your background, you know, education, where do you work, that sort of thing?
Okay, I have spent most of my career, I graduated with a BA in photography from the Heron School of Art, maybe in 2002, I can't remember how long ago that was, but I've basically been with the Heron School of Art Library since I was a student at Heron, and major change this year, I have switched over to the Indianapolis City Archives. So I'm in my fifth month here. Big change.
Well, congratulations. That's very exciting.
Thank you. Still dealing with a lot of photography. When I was at Heron, I was in charge of the slide department. I would shoot slides. We'd mount slides. And, of course, slides are in the past now. But basically in charge of digital collections. We would scan a lot of older images and do digital collection work with the city. The Historic Preservation Commission was one of the people or one of the groups that we worked with, and Indiana Landmarks. So aspects of this job I already came in pretty familiar with already.
So, well, great. All right. Yeah. So you said you have a degree in art, right?
Art photography, yeah.
Excuse me. So, you know, you and I have known each other for a few years, all in kind of this historical world that here in Indianapolis. Do you consider yourself an archivist, a historian, or kind of a combination of all of the above?
I get to call myself an archivist in my position now. I think in the past I would have been slightly uncomfortable with that, although, yes, I did some of that work. I mean, I'd been working with glass negatives and older images, you know, for a really long time. I have a familiarity with the care of those kind of things, but, you know, this would be something that we would be doing scanning at Heron, and it wasn't like our collections. So, sort of, yes, but mainly, I would say, definitely historian.
Historian, all right. Well, so we're sitting here today, and unfortunately, being a podcast, we can't show you around here, but we're at the Indianapolis City Archives, which we're going to be having an episode about this in the next few months, so stay tuned. But what we're here to talk about today is an exhibit at the Irvington Historical Society. Right. So first, I know you're involved with the Irvington Historical Society. I don't want to call it IHS, because that's just going to get confusing. Yeah, with the Indiana Historical Society. But so what is the Irvington Historical Society?
So it is a fully volunteer-run organization that has an art collection and its own archive. As you know, Irvington was its own town, separate from Indianapolis, and on top of that, the Irvington Historical Society is housed in the Bona Thompson Memorial Library, which is the only structure left of Butler's second campus that was at Irvington.
Before they moved up to the current location,
correct,
right?
So they were in Irvington from mid-1870s to 1928?
Yep, 1928.
Yep, so we are the only surviving building left of the campus, and it's a lovely building. My connections to Irvington, I don't live in Irvington currently, I never have, but I've lived Warren Park a little bit further out. My parents were both from Irvington, so I kind of got grandfathered in. I know about Irvington, but I've never truly lived in Irvington. But I have a lot of connections to the folks at the Historical Society. I joined maybe in 2017 and had been helping out ever since. So,
well, it's a great facility. I've been out there for a few events, and Irvington is obviously very, very, got a lot of history associated with it, aside from just being the location of, the second location of Butler University, but various rotating exhibits out there as well, right, related to the archives. So the current exhibit here, can you tell us, what is this exhibit?
So this is a collection of images that were shot by a man named Osbert Sumner. And Osbert, he doesn't live in Irvington until a little bit later. He grows up in Canada. He's a Canadian immigrant. He comes to the United States mid-1890s, and he's living in what would be now Heron Morton. But as he gets older, he has purchased a home in, or actually had a home built in Irvington on North Ritter. So his story, how we learn about it, is that there were glass negatives. He was a amateur photographer, and these glass negatives were left in his home underneath the basement stairs. So the family that had lived there, maybe in the mid-60s, they took the negatives with them. They stayed in the house briefly. They took the negatives with them. And I think somewhere in the 2000s, I'm not exactly sure when, but this family donated these negatives, gave us the story.
So like the early 2000s?
Early 2000s, okay. Yeah. So it isn't until now, in the time that I've been part of the Irvington Historical Society, we had an archivist named Paula Schmidt and her husband Steve, and they had really helped out with some technology, and you know, those negatives had been kind of sitting around for a couple of years. We didn't have the means to, you know, have them scanned, so they had the forethought to, you know, get a grant to get a scanner, and then they started sharing these negatives online, which is how I learned about them. There's a lot of collections at the Irvington Historical Society, and it, you know, you don't really know where to start, so I have to credit the Schmidts for really pushing that collection forward.
So these were found, and this part of the story, you know, discovering this, I know you and I have talked about this before, it's, I don't want to say quite Indiana Jones-like, but it's Indianapolis version of Indiana Jones, finding something under the stairway. And I've dug through my basement, I've hoped that I found something like this, and all I find are bugs and things like that. It's not great. But these glass glass slides or glass negatives?
They're glass negatives, so they're not, if you see a slide that's a positive, you hold it up to the light, it's a positive image. So these are definitely negatives. They need to be reversed in order to get the positive
image. So how big are these?
Most of them are 4x5, and they are, the collection is about 337 images.
Wow.
So there was a box, it was a Felsnap, the soap box that they were found in, and Steve Barnett, who was the director at the time, he gives a little bit of background that there were sleeves with these, but, you know, when they went to pick them up, they just basically disintegrated.
Oh, just because they're so old.
Right. So the sleeves are gone, so this collection came to us with no information. So the research starts with, okay, you know, who builds this home? You can kind of start from there, but there's little clues. And I said, when I, you know, I had this talk the other day, it was like, it kind of feels like you're cheating because these clues just kind of come out. If we didn't know who, you know, if I was starting from scratch trying to figure out this collection, you know, one of the slides that would stand out to me is who we now know is Osbert, next to a canoe with a monogrammed pillow that says O-R-S. So, I mean, we would definitely make that connection to, you know, first owner of the home to this, so that, you know, and that's probably how people initially found that information. Yeah. So when I came to it, Osbert was already identified.
Okay.
But a lot of the collection, we didn't know where they were. We didn't know who people were. So that was the start for me.
Well, I think that's how you and I were chatting about this. There were a couple of waterway pictures that mm-hmm. I know you and I were discussing. So Osbert Sumner, and we'll dive into some of the what's in the photographs, but Osbert Sumner, he lived in Indianapolis. He was born in Canada. And I know you kind of traced together the history of him.
Right.
One of the stories I remember you saying was how, you know, his camera, that didn't you find a reference about him actually getting the camera that he used for this?
Yeah, when you start, this is one of the things that I'm, you know, I don't know what the modern day equivalent would be for just society notes in newspapers, but yeah, when you start to dig in, and Osbert's a very unusual name, so the hits for that are pretty solid when you look up Osbert. So, yeah, one of the first hits that you're doing when you're doing newspaper research was that Osbert was a clerk in a wholesale grocery store. I think it was Schnull and Company. He had two jobs when he was here. But basically, at this one, it was saying that he wasn't in good health. And we're not exactly sure what his condition was, but he was leaving his position to go back to Canada. And the little clipping says, as a gesture of goodwill by his coworkers, they gave him a camera as a send-off, and you're just like,
could that be the whole start of
yeah,
this whole thing?
Yeah, you know, and this was in August, I think, of 1898. So, you know, you're slightly confused because, okay, well, now he's leaving, but then he's back. So this is, you know, whatever his ailment was not enough to keep him away from Indiana. He comes back to stay with his widowed aunt on North Pennsylvania Street again, so we at least figure that a lot of these images start somewhere in 1898.
That's kind of the starting point for them.
Right.
Okay. So you said, I think, well, over 300 images, right?
Right.
So kind of describe for us, like, what were the scenes that he was taking pictures of? Because I know we mentioned there's some other river, but not just that. What else was he taking pictures of around Indianapolis?
Well, Osbert's a young guy. He's in his mid to late 20s when he's doing these shots, so he's a young, active guy. He's hanging with his friends a lot. There's a lot of picnic scenes. There's a lot of family. He's in his canoe. He's got his penny farthing bike. He's doing other bicycle races, but he's also catching scenes of events that are happening. So he's at Benjamin Harrison's funeral. He is doing, he's taking pictures of when his sister's in town for a Methodist convention, you know, and that's catching interiors of Tomlinson Hall that we've never seen before.
I was going to say that, but during your presentation, is that one of the only interior images that we're aware of, or one of the few?
It's few. There's other shots of, like, conventions that had happened there, mm-hmm. where you're seeing, like, pictures of a particular booth, but it's not catching the entirety of the space.
And Tomlinson Hall is what was a big kind of public gathering space just west of the present-day Market House. It burned down in the 1950s.
Or 1958.
1958, yep. Thank you. It was demolished. There's a whole rumor that it was caused by a pigeon flying up with a cigarette, which I've got my own issues with that potential theory, but we can save that for another day.
Yeah.
What other scenes? I mean, so Osbert, he was a member, we talked about the river. There's a lot of scenes of him in his canoe, and we know he was a member of the Indianapolis Canoe Club, which was based in Riverside Park, right there by the 30th Street Bridge.
Right.
Anything else? Any other images, or like, what was your favorite images from this collection? Out of the 300, I know.
There's too many. There's just too many. The Tomlinson shot is a really nice one, but I have to admit, I think my favorite shot is on North Delaware Street, and it is. I assume this is a friend of Osbert's that he's sandwiched between two bicycles. He's fallen down somehow. There is a minor accident that has happened on North Delaware, and this would be close to about 19th and Delaware. And it's just a great shot of the Esplanade that was still there. So on the stretch of maybe 19th up to 22nd, maybe, Delaware, Alabama, and New Jersey all had mm-hmm. Esplanades, like Woodruff Place, and the only one that survives is New Jersey.
Is New Jersey, yeah.
So this catches a moment in time when that's still there. It just has this, you know, great neighborhood feel. The stretch of houses that is behind him, you know, you could see all of them, and what's nice is that all of those are still standing today. So I love that that's catching something it's not just a memory that's like, you know, the Esplanade is, but the, you know, all the houses are still there. But the other funny thing is it's just such a candid shot. And there's, you know, horse droppings, if we'll be nice to say, in the street, so that this guy is just so close to this. So there's, you know, it's just a really interesting shot. I think he's catching things, you know, in being in a canoe. If you have to think about like the 1890s, like, you know, for him to have glass negatives, these glass negatives are, you know, a mass produced product now that amateurs could go out and do, you know, you could take shots yeah. anywhere, you know, and I try to think of like, you know, what fun it is to be able to be like, hey, I can take this camera in a canoe, or I can take it on my bike, and, you know, to just get all these perspectives that are, you know, what you're not used to. You know, I try to think of like how we have drone footage now, mm-hmm. just available to anyone, where you could do these different perspectives. You can have your drone follow you, and it's just sort of like he's playing around with his camera in the same way that I think people are now with like how you do like drone footage stuff.
Like the canoeing pictures. I mean, he's getting his camera out there in the river, paddling around. And I mean, I went out week before last on my kayak with my camera. I was terrified the entire time. I mean, I was sitting there with it wrapped around my neck thinking, I'm going to drop into the water. I'm going to tip over. But, you know, it was amazing. Some of those are amazing shots. And, you know, from just the stuff that I've looked at in this collection, what I find amazing is his shots of Riverside Park, you know, the river, the bayous, the waterways that used to spiderweb through Riverside Park, which are all gone now. But some of his photography just shows it's great evidence of those kind of former features of that park.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that I knew that you would have more familiarity with than I would. I mean, I think one of the first things when I started looking at this collection, even before I had an interest in Osbert and his history, was to see where I could find any structures in the building that I would recognize right away. And there were a few. There is a house that's at 16th and Meridian, where the CVS now is, that would have been the Holt residence. And it's a really nice stone house that was on that corner that I was already familiar with it being there. So this particular, you know, scene, it was like, I know exactly where they are. And this is part of a floral parade that would have been turning the corner. There's a carriage there that has just flowers everywhere on the wheels. And, you know, so it was fun to kind of go through initially and be like, I know where this is, I know where this is, I know where this is. And then, you know, once I kind of exhausted that, then I kind of got deeper into Osbert's story, which is, you know, a whole other, you know.
And his story, and you gave a presentation about this out at the Irvington Historical Society several weeks ago, and you mm-hmm. talked about there's some photos of his father at various events, Osbert's father at various events around Indianapolis. I think there's some in Cincinnati. But you connected that with a diary. Again, please correct me if I'm misstating it, but a diary that Osbert's father wrote that he talks about those events that he was being photographed at, right?
Yeah. That was, I think that's the real discovery in all this. I mean, you know, identifying things that are around here is great, but when I reached out, Osbert is from a small town, Oakville, Ontario, which is basically a suburb of Toronto now. It's just maybe about an hour outside of, to the west of Toronto. And, you know, my goal initially in any search is, you know, I'm going to reach out to the local historical society. Mm-hmm. So, and Oakville had a nice historical society website that, you know, really gave a lot of information. They have an image database that you could search. And I thought, okay, we'll do that. So, you know, you type in the name Sumner and, you know, I'm seeing that. I think the thing that caught me initially, even before finding anything out about his family, is that some of the same negatives that we have, they had prints of.
They actually had some of those already in their collection.
Yeah. Huh. So, you know, that's a big wow moment when you're, you know, you see the prints from, you know, and they're identified.
It's a full circle in research, right?
So I'd say there was probably maybe six or seven images from the collection. If they weren't the exact image, they were taken at the same time. Mm-hmm. One of his sister on Dominion Day, so she had maple leaves all up her dress.
That's a Canadian holiday, right?
Correct. There are, you know, some of his brother. His youngest sister was a school teacher, so it was her class. So we identified who she was. I mean, this really made connections. So we found out a majority. If we knew who the family was because of all these images on the Oakville site, you know, we could identify all those people. You know, we just had the slew of people that we could identify now. And then you go a little deeper to research on his father, and, you know, they had a page dedicated to George Sumner, his father, who was the chief constable of this small town.
Oh, really?
So he was a big figure there. And kind of like our version of Calvin Fletcher, they had his diaries for, you know, it seems like 40 years. And not only that, they had them transcribed, so they were searchable on their end. They weren't available online, but they were searchable.
So he was pretty prominent locally then, at least he was notable within the community then.
Yeah, and they had, you know, a nice portrait of him, you know, very formal. So I'd set up an appointment to go see them. That wasn't too outlandish for me. My husband had a gallery, he's an artist, and had a gallery in Toronto, so we would be visiting that gallery. Yeah, maybe once a year, so to go an hour outside the city wasn't a problem. So I made prints. I just did, you know, copies of all 300 negatives and made an appointment and went up to the Oakville Historical Society, and it was great. They had tea and biscuits for me and it was maybe 7 or 8 people that were there. I got a nice little tour of the town. I really got the VIP treatment when it was very nice.
You're helping international relations.
Yeah, I wish I could have done it now. but they were in absolute awe to watch these people look through all of these images. And, you know, their favorite one, there's an image of George Sumner on the dock in the harbor in Oakville. And he's just sitting there with his feet hanging over the edge, you know, and it's a very casual shot. And to watch these guys just like, oh my God, you know, I think they're so used to a formality with him, and his diaries are, you know, not necessarily formal, but he's, you know, you see him as a, you know, a citizen of this town and, you know, a leader, but,
sure.
But to see him in a more
casual setting, yeah.
There's another picture of him holding his granddaughter. So, you know, it's, you know, it was really neat to see them connect. And that wasn't the only image. There was some other images of a sailboat that was up there, and they were familiar with the builder of that boat. They knew the name of the boat. I think it was the Aggie. So there's a lot of connections for Oakville folks in these images.
Well, and it's amazing to see that what was found underneath the stairs in Indianapolis
with no names
has led to this whole project, and then international connections in Canada that you've been able to track down. That's what I love about history, when you can find something like this that, you know, not only shows us what Indianapolis used to be like, but also provides that connection to a location well outside of the state of Indiana.
Well, and then to go back to your question about another favorite image, as far as visual, you know, the images I was discussing in the Tomlinson Hall or the image that's on Delaware, another favorite image is a picture of Osbert's brother and his father on a lawn of this giant institutional building that we later found out was a Carthage. This is outside Cincinnati. This is a asylum, and we were able to identify that. But once we started talking with the folks at Oakville and going through the diaries and finding where Indianapolis shows up, and this is a mention. So in October of 1900, George Sumner comes to visit Indianapolis by way of Cincinnati. So in his diary, he mentions that they go out to Carthage, and where he worked 40 years ago, and that Osbert took some photos. And that was the first one where you, like,
wow.
you finally make a connection to this image. You know what the building is, you know who the people are, you know the exact day now, you know? And that, you know, it just gave me goosebumps to see that and be like, you know, my God. I mean,
well,
we made every connection possible from nothing for these photos.
The photos are a companion to the diary,
yeah.
Which is a fantastic connection to make.
Yeah, it's a fascinating collection, it really is.
So this whole collection, there's an exhibit now out at the Irvington Historical Society, but there was also a book about these images,
right.
Correct? Can you tell us about that?
So Steve Schmidt and I, so the Paula Schmidt, the archivist, and Steve Schmidt was a board member, we both had an interest in this, and we kind of came at it from different directions. Steve had an interest with a lot of the technological photography aspect of it. He's interested in the camera he's using, you know, how is he developing, you know, and I'm sort of interested in that, but, you know, it's really the imagery and making the connections that were the big thing with me. And anytime I'd have a find, you know, Steve would send me another image and say, where do you think this is? And I'd, you know, work on it for, you know, a couple of days and send it back and say, it's here. Took me a while, but I found it. So we realized that this is interesting enough that this could be a book. Now Steve has several books under his belt already, and he's a pretty good writer. I do not. I'm not a strong writer, but we had an agreement that I said I would do. I'll do all this research if you don't mind doing the writing, and so we had a nice agreement on that. So, you know, I scanned the images and, you know, got them the size that we like, and, you know, there really wasn't a lot of editing to do. Osbert's work is really nice for an amateur photographer.
They are really nice and beautiful images.
So, yeah, I'd say, you know, we had a nice partnership, and I think we laid it up pretty good.
So the exhibit that's running right now, are all the images up there or just a portion of them?
Just a portion. I'd say maybe a third of the collection is on view right now, but we did put out a binder, a small binder. The quality is not great in there, but just so if someone wanted to see all of the images, if you wanted to take the time to flip through, there's so many canoe shots and, you know, picnic shots that we didn't end up including. So yeah, there's plenty to see that we couldn't fit it all on the walls.
I think I've spent a lot of time staring at those canoe shots myself. And that binder, that's available at the Historical Society, right?
Right.
Within the exhibit.
Right.
So how long is that exhibit running? Because I know it started back in
May.
Well,
we will have it up. It was going to be till November. So it will be, I don't know the end of it, probably mid-November.
Okay, mid-November to
visit. Mid-November, yep. Yeah, but I hope we can show this someplace else at some point.
Traveling exhibit, maybe?
I'd love it if this collection went up to Canada at some point and that we printed a few more of the more Oakville-centric images. I don't think we're going to get everyone to come to the East Side to see this collection. And of course, you know, Bona Thompson, we're open on weekends only, from so Saturday and Sunday, 1 to 4, so we don't have the best hours for viewing. But I do hope that we can get a more downtown-centric
location
for sharing this collection at some point. So.
Well, if the City Market was open, that seems like that might be a cool place to hold an exhibit.
That would be great.
But we'll have to wait a few years for that. Yeah. Going back to the Historical Society, you mentioned the hours, but how much does it cost to visit?
It is absolutely free.
But donations are accepted?
Donations are very much accepted.
And the book, can that be purchased at the Historical Society?
Yes. As of right now, this is the only location to purchase the book is at the Irvington Historical Society.
Okay. And Irvington, I mean, besides the Historical Society, I mean, a bunch of restaurants, great place to visit. So
come
on out to the East Side. The images, is there any plans to put them online, kind of an online exhibit?
I'd say so. We were operating the same sort of software that the Oakville Historical Society was. Well, we do have that, but it's more the background. I think if we were in a better funding situation that we could have a front-end digital image collection, it would be great to share these online.
So if any listeners want to fund a digitization project, the Irvington Historical Society, shoot me a message or shoot DD a message, and we can make that happen, get those things online. So you're working with the Indianapolis City Archives now. What kind of projects are you working on? Do you have in the works or waiting in the wings?
There's lots to work on. I think the major project that on my second day here was a giant move to bring back about 20,000 rolls of microfilm that do not have a manifest, and we are just discovering them box by box. And I love that. I love being at the beginning of a project where you don't know exactly which direction to turn. So there's lots of discoveries in that way. And because it's film, it feels comfortable working with it. Yeah. So it's kind of Wild West, starting from scratch, trying to figure out where we're going. You know, we don't even have digital collections here yet. So we could still shop around and find out what's best for us. So I kind of like starting from scratch in that sense. It makes every day interesting.
Starting from scratch and never a dull moment, it sounds like. And that's why archivists are so important. I'll get up on my soapbox for a second that, you know, all the research that historians do, so much of it is facilitated by the work done by archivists. So support your local library, support your local archives. Dee Dee, thank you very much for your time today. Appreciate you taking some time, you know, during your busy schedule working on the microfilm. And as I said, we're sitting at the Indianapolis City Archives, and in a few months I'm going to have an interview with the director of the City Archive, Jordan Ryan, so please stay tuned for that. But Dee Dee, thank you very much for your time today. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
And everyone, thank you very much for listening to this episode of Yesterday's Indianapolis. As always, you can check out my Indianapolis history blog at class900indy.com. And thank you for listening.